hearts. Sharp swords with handle art to spar trolls and charge tolls to cross roads. Where bandits are catacombs and giant doors. Protect the chest and store some legendary items with the dragon bones and iron.
It's horse. A grand theft of Elder Scrolls. Simon's quest with Toe and Earl. Rocket shoes to Everclue. Easter eggs and gaming news. The POTUS need some bad dudes to crash your crew like Bandicoot. All shit a gaming and glitch control issues. Control issues.
Yes, yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Yes, y'all.
Yes, y'all. Well, this is Control Issues. I am the AMC.
And this is A-Dub. You can find us at control-issues.com. You can also go to your podcast provider, whoever that may be. Look for Control Issues, download it, subscribe to it, rate it, review it. Head on over to twitch.tv/controlissuespod, where we put up gameplay videos for your viewing pleasure. You can drop us a line, let us know how you feel, let us know what you're upset about or what you're thankful for. controlissuespod@gmail.com. You can also head on over to Spotify and give us some spins. We're up on there too. Control Issues, look for that. And the blue sky, Control Issues Pod. AMC, how you living?
Living well, A-Dub. We took last week off. I am now doing better, but yeah, we had to miss last week's episode because I just ended up just getting horribly sick. Actually, after the week prior when we recorded, like in that episode, I had mentioned I was fading in that episode, just like not feeling well. And by the end of it, I was like, I cannot wait to like just rest and take some medicine. And I was like sick after the episode, sick Monday, but then by Tuesday, fever hits. And so then dealing with all that, had the fever for a little over 24 hours. And then by Thursday, recovering and just a lot of like congestion. And most of that cleared up, but even now I'm still gonna have to like mute every now and then just to get out a cough because it's like a nagging like a cough that I have from the sickness. But man, it was not good. So I like didn't work out, didn't do much for the past 2 weeks. I'd even gotten the Switch 2 on that the day that we recorded, and probably didn't get to setting it up until that Thursday of the week or the like following week, just because of the fact that like I just was not in the mood to, I was not in the headspace to start like a new console, start a new game and like really be able to enjoy it. Like I was just, you know, just surviving the day to day of being like in the throes of sickness. Mm-hmm. So yeah, once I got all that under control, yeah, things were better. I actually just got in like my first workout in probably 2 weeks yesterday. So that was nice. And also just, kind of just had shows to keep me company. I was like getting stuff together. And so, yeah, I watched like this one documentary, Court of Gold. It's on Netflix, and it basically just it showcases the Team USA basketball team. The Dream Team Part 2, and they're running the Paris Olympics, which was absolutely phenomenal. Because I feel like every modern day documentary about Team USA basketball is about like, has the world finally caught up to us? That they finally passed us in basketball. And we have lost like previous years. And so like they had one documentary on the Redeem Team, which is, I believe, after
the Redeem Team. Like, is every team a team?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a name for all the teams. And like, yeah, I think we got like gold, like bronze the prior Olympics. And so then it was like, all right, we need a commitment from all the best players again. And so they call them the Redeem Team, and they came back and won, which is interesting too, to kind of make a documentary about Team USA being the underdogs when it's like, all right, we needed Kobe and LeBron, like everybody to fully commit to this, and then we won. But like, yeah, because we had lost, they still had this underdog feel to the team, even though it's like all the stars of the world, the best players in the league are playing. And then this year, I should say last year, but with this documentary, it was all the best, all the past, I want to say, four MVPs in the league have all been foreign players, like Canada, Serbia, and yeah, other Cameroon, and then Greece. So like many different countries, but non-American players getting MVPs. And so there's this idea that we have great players, but we don't have the best players on our team. Yeah, but yeah, it's we still you get like LeBron, Durant, and Curry, and they get together and still put magic. And it was an awesome documentary just because it's if you're a pro, one, if you're from America, you get to just see the reverence other countries have for like trying to beat Team USA. It's like such a big deal. It's like we could take down the Americans in basketball. It'll be such a big deal. And then on the flip side, what was pretty good about this documentary is all the previous ones have covered solely Team USA, but this one, they actually had footage from Serbia's team, from Canada's team, from France, and a little bit of Germany. And so it was nice to see other teams kind of be included in the documentary and to get their perspective from one, not only how they viewed America, but then their program and like their like Serbia, how like it's a country of like I think they said like 5 million people, and the fact that they are still this contender that almost they have the best player in the world and they almost took down Team USA. And in Canada, the upstart team, and in France, where they have the youngest superstar in this guy, Victor Wembanyama, who he was Rookie of the Year last year. I think he was only like 19, maybe 20. And he's like, I want to say like 7'4", 7'6", and is able to dribble the ball, shoot three
What?
pointers.
Those numbers don't go together.
Yeah. And so like he makes he's like he makes 7-footers like look normal in comparison to him. And yet he like he's able to dribble and shoot. So he's like considered this freak phenomenon. So you get to see kind of France's like perspective on being possibly the future of like of like the, I guess the vision of what the future is going to be of basketball is within the lens of this player Victor Wembanyama. And so yeah, it's it was awesome to get those perspectives, and then with USA coming out on top, it was also like it felt very much like a like not propaganda, but you know, like if you're from America, you're gonna enjoy it in a different way than if you're from another country. But
Yeah.
still, it was a great documentary. Absolutely loved it. Court of Gold, highly recommend it if you're into basketball and Olympic basketball on top of that, FIBA basketball, if you will. So yeah, awesome, awesome, good times, and happy to be healthy. I'm definitely when you're feeling sick, there are times where you feel vulnerable in a way where it's like, oh, I could totally die. Like at times you go through life where you're like, I'm unstoppable. And then you get sick and you're like, nope. Like all it takes is the wrong bug to hit me and I am totally gone. So appreciate the health while I have it. A-Dub, how have you been for the past 2 weeks though?
Past couple of weeks, I'm trudging my way out of the rut of laziness. I did my walk to the boxing
Yes.
gym. The boxing gym was closed, so I did my walk back. Did some dips, did some pull-ups, did some
Closed on a
push-ups.
Saturday or just a rant? Oh, okay.
Yeah, for Saturday, I was talking to Sammy, and he said they're trying to get EMT certified or something like that. So. Shut down the gym.
Okay,
And
cool.
but this weekend, gym was open. I got in there. Freddie
Okay.
said something to me.
He said what up? He acknowledged the guy.
Oh, he always says what's up. We fist bump, smile at each other. But he said something, and I don't know if he was like giving me a tip or talking shit or something. And I feel bad because I missed the moment. But he's hilarious. But yeah, just getting back into
Like
working
he may
out.
he like he might have given you like a tidbit that would like just turned you like into like it just he's like, you just see you slightly just turn that fist in and you're punching through
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's just like, damn, I missed the tip, man. But yeah, got back. It's been a few weeks since I hit some bags. So, the muscles relax and they rebuild while you're not doing anything, and then you go back in, but it's still been weeks, so you're not used to that cadence, and you're not used to like that endurance and pacing yourself. So I'm like turbocharged on the bag. I'm like, I'm just moving. I feel light. I'm like, oh man, I'm all over this. And I'm just thinking every time I punch it, like, hey, calm down. You're burning way too much energy. You're not gonna make it through this workout. And it was the whole time, it was just that balancing act. But once it got close to closing time at the gym, I just let it go. So, just trying to get a bit more consistent. I got everything else going for me in my life, so I just gotta get on top of my fitness. And unfortunately, it takes continuous daily effort. and you just got to get acclimated to that to some extent. So working on that, I had the bright idea that, hey, after years of having houseplants and them doing kind of okay, not dying, but not really like thriving, I was in Target and I just happened to go down an aisle I never go down. And out the corner of my eye, this bottle caught my attention, plant food. And I was like, you know what? Why am I not feeding my plants all these years? So yeah, today started with that. So I'm looking forward to seeing results, whatever those results may be. You know, maybe there's more new growth. Maybe the existing growth gets some of its rigidity and its vibrance back. You know, maybe the plant's stronger. Maybe it's fuller or larger. Who knows? We'll see. I got three plants. They all eaten. Set my reminders, and I'm just gonna make sure I have the plant food on deck. So I'm gradually becoming a better plant father. And I feel good for the experience. I feel bad for the suffering I may be causing along the way, but I'm trying to minimize my footprint in that regard. Staying on top of my anime, Kaiju number 8 is kicking ass in its second season. I highly recommend people go out and watch that. The drama is getting thick. The stakes are rising. You never know where the enemy is. It's going down in big ways. AMC, I know this is about me, but you had shared that you had just signed up for Crunchyroll in the
Oh, that's right.
pre-show.
That's
Yeah, that's
right.
right. Yeah.
Wait, well, wait, hold on, real quick, while I remember that. What's the is it on Crunchyroll? Or is that Amazon, the level one that everybody talks about?
Oh, Solo Leveling, that is on Crunchyroll.
Okay. Yes, I gotta make sure I watch that. That's
Yeah,
the one.
you make sure you watch that. Dude,
Yeah, that's
I was chilling with Grimes and
the
Naive, and we watched the whole first season.
one.
Like,
Damn.
every time we got to the end of the episode, I was like, you want to watch one more? And they were like, yeah.
All right, Solo Leveling. That will be the next one I watch. I've been.
Solo Leveling, there's a My Hero Limited series of vigilantes, I think.
Oh, what? All
It's
right.
like
It might
five
just drop out
episodes,
tomorrow.
but it's a little extra hit of My Hero if you need it.
All right. Thank you for letting me know about that as well.
And I'll also let you know about my personal favorite show, Rising of the Shield Hero, and season 4 has been underway. So,
Rising of the Shield Hero? Okay.
Rising of the Shield Hero, and then with that, my last recommendation, and I'll let you
I'm writing
off
this
and
all down.
figure out your life
Okay,
yourself. But a Black Clover.
I have seen Black Clover like on like Netflix and whatnot. So I'll check that
Yeah.
out.
Yeah,
Black
it's like
Clover.
My Hero, but with magic.
All right, not gonna complain about that then. Is
Oh yeah.
it without the Marvel?
I don't know, it's kind of Marvel, man. That's part of why I love it. Like, it's just drama. Everybody's somebody or something. It's There are no wasted characters. There's no wasted time. It's just a great show. There's so much growth, so much character development. But yeah, Rising of the Shield Hero, Kaiju number 8, that's kicking ass. Was I watching any more anime? Of course, I'm sticking with 2B Hero X. That's awesome. I was watching. Oh, and Hulu has anime. There's a show that I'm watching on there right now. Like, I watched one episode, I think, like months, maybe years back, and I was like, I can't watch this shit. And then I'm coming back today and I'm like, this shit is dope, duh. It's called Dororo, and
Okay.
the story is absolutely outrageous, but it works and I'm having a blast with it. So basically, like, this dude, he has his land and his estate, but everything's failing. Like, just nothing's going his way, just miserable luck. His little empire is just on its last legs. So he makes a deal with these demons, these 12 demon lords, I believe, and he says, you can have whatever you want, just let me prosper. So he makes this pact with them on the day of his first child's birth. And so the demon lords take everything from the child: arms, legs, eyes, ears, nose,
Damn.
voice, sense of taste, nervous system, like literally all of these things. gone. And the baby is just a lump of flesh and bone and blood. But somehow he's just clinging to life, and he has this ability that allows him that he can see, because he can't see anything else, he can see the souls of all living things. And of course, you know, they have different colors. And this is the one part where the show kind of loses me, because somebody gets him, trains him up, and gives him prosthetic limbs, a mask, and stuff to make him look normal. Amir, why do the fingers and the hands articulate?
What?
His hands function like normal arms and hands, but they're prosthetics. So do his legs. And I'm just like, okay, I understand it's a cartoon. Like, you gotta have certain concessions.
It's like the nerves or something else still affecting it.
Yeah. But, you know, he becomes this amazing demon hunter. And like, what happens is, as he kills the demon lords, he regains the parts of him that they took. So like, he'll kill a demon lord and like a leg will come back. He'll kill a demon lord and like he'll get a sense of smell and that kind of thing. So that's like the overarching premise. Of course, there's a deeper story within there, and but it's a dope show. I love anime like that. It's definitely not something that they're gonna milk for several seasons. I think it came out in 2019. It might have one season, maybe two. So I'm looking forward to burning through that. And other than that, you know, just trying to read a little bit more. I have The Creative Gene by Hideo Kojima. I still gotta finish reading that. I bought some other Kojima Productions products to, you know, further support the genius and the creativity, the innovation, the vision. But yeah, man, I love all things Death Stranding. So, you know, if there's a chance to get some real world stuff that brings that universe into the real world, then I'm about that. So I support that kind of stuff. But other than that, man, just chilling.
Well, you talk about ordering stuff for Death Stranding. I know you've been playing Death Stranding, so let's hear about them games, A-Dub. How you what
Yeah,
you've been
man.
playing?
Yeah, man. I was playing Wuchang Fallen Feathers. Pretty tough. Absolutely love it. Can't say too much there. Like, I pushed through to the next act, and I decided, you know, I've definitely played my fill of this for now. I'm at a point where I still know how to play the game. I know what's going on. I can put this to the side for a bit and come back comfortably, because, you know, I don't want to continue disrespecting Death Stranding 2. However, the PS Plus games that I believe we talked about it on the show, right? We talked about the PS Plus
Nah,
games.
because now they came out, I think, within the week that we were off.
Ah, shit. All right, well, the PS Plus games for August were revealed. One of them was Lies of P. So I had been hearing praise for that game for quite a while, decided it was time to check it out for myself. I can see why it gets its praise. It's the most Souls-like of the Souls-likes I've played, to the extent that it looks and feels like Dark Souls 1, Bloodborne era, kind of from Software. And honestly, in my opinion, though, just based on my preferences with Souls-like games, it's kind of to a fault, because it leans more toward the slower and methodical side of the Souls-like, whereas a game like Wuchang Fallen Feathers leans more toward the fluidity of the action and the responsiveness of the controls. Like, Lies of P is, it's good. Like, all the praise is deserved. I don't personally agree with the pedestal that it's put on, just based on my impression after the first 10 or so hours I played. I mean, I've gotten out of the tutorial area. I've defeated several bosses. You know, I've upgraded my P organ quite a bit and gotten a number of weapons and things. You know, the game is opening up, and it's really showing me how it stands on the shoulders of From Software's games, while gazing further down the horizon with all the original ideas and things that it implements into its overall experience. But I don't know, man, that combat just ain't really doing it for me. I like all the it does where it really excels. And where I can like kind of sympathize with the praise is that it does a lot in the QOL department that I feel like Souls Likes could benefit from if they looked to Liza P for influence. So, like, for instance, you have the D-pad where you press it one way and you'll change your weapon. You press it the other way and you change your item. You press it up, you change a spell, like that kind of stuff. With Liza P, like, you have those four quadrants, but if you like press up repeatedly, it'll cycle through some stuff and you can use it. Same with down, but then you can hold down X and it brings up another little quadrant menu, and then you can press the D-pad and select like those quick items. So if you're just walking, I can hold down a button, bring up the menu, and throw like a rock at an enemy instead of like having to cycle through stuff or maybe go in my inventory and reassign things. There's a lot less inventory management when it comes to Liza P, and that I really like a great deal. I like what it's doing with its bonfires, or what is it? It's like a star fire or something or other, but it's doing a lot of cool things. I like what it's doing with the Pinocchio story.
I was gonna say, is there any more story to it than you would find in necessarily in a Souls game? Because like, one thing you always hear about Souls games is like a lot of the stories within like the items and stuff like that. Is there more story to it or not? Not really. It's about the same.
I would say there's more, like there's a lot more dialogue in this than you find in any From Software game. So, you're talking to people, you're learning about the world, you're picking up things and you're reading. Like you're given context as to why you're doing things every time you're going to do something. And I notice it also is a little better, or better. It actually tracks your quest to some extent, because if you're at a step in a quest, what it'll do is it'll show a little image of somebody's face next to in the fast travel list. So when you're looking at all the different locations, if you see somebody's face next to a location, it means that you can go find them there and proceed through the next step of a quest. Wu Chong does this as well, so I imagine they probably learned it from Liza P, or maybe both games learned it from some other Souls-like game that I haven't played before. But it does a lot of cool quality of life stuff like that, where it's you aren't being, I guess the game isn't making you go and find its secrets and things like that. It's like, hey, there's something you could do over here. You might want to go over here, that kind of stuff, without having waypoints and GPS lines and all that stuff. So you're still going out and getting it on your own, but you have just that little nudge of, hey, there's something over here, you might want to check it out. So yeah, Liza P is cool. Wu Chong still holding it down. But then I went back to the game that I need to keep investing my time in, which is Death Stranding 2. I'm about 80 hours in now. I just completed an episode where I think it's like episode 7 or something like that. It's close to there, but where I've been told that I've hooked up half of Australia. So I think that's a pretty good sign. I know I'm at least more than half done with the game. I'm drawing ever closer to this massive mountain that's in the middle of the continent. So I know there's going to be a lot of gameplay in there with the snow and the steep cliffs, which I'm not looking forward to. Continuing to five star all the relationships. Like, I five star the pizza chef, and he taught me like first of all, AC. Man. I feel so bad that you're not gonna play this game. It just has moments and scenes that are out of this world. So, like, I was advancing things with the pizza chef. Like, I think I got to 4 stars or something. Next thing you know, his door swings open. So I go down in there and, oh, there's printers down here manufacturing machine guns. What's this all about? And then I go through another door. Next thing you know, I'm having a straight up, like, just Jet Li combat scene. It's a cutscene, so I'm not playing. But I'm fighting a pizza chef in the middle of the kitchen, and like while we're fighting, his moves somehow advance the process of making a pizza and putting stuff in the oven. It's so good. But yeah, he teaches me like pizza moves. I think it's like Taekwondo, where dough is spelled dough. You know how it goes. So one of my weapons is rubber dough that pizza chefs use to practice tossing. And I could throw that at people and knock them out if I hit them with a headshot. I got a spin kick and just cool little moves. Doll man's talking about it, like, maybe you could teach me some moves. VR. It's so cool. Got the girl squad cracking on the Magellan, Elle Fanning and Lea Seydoux and whoever plays Rainey, they're just glamming it up, got their matching jackets, taking Polaroids. Like, yes, this game. It's just such a chill game. And somehow it still has good feeling action. It has amazing locations and biomes. I mean, you're going to these high peaks, you're going just down in these flooded rivers, sandstorms, and the rail system, and mining, and creatures, saving animals. I mean, it's so many things working together to make this one unique experience. Like, Death Stranding 2 is just, it's a once in a lifetime, or like once in a generation kind of game, man. It's just pure creativity from top to bottom. It takes itself seriously, but it has no problem poking fun at itself and laughing. It's an absolute blast. I can't help but recommend this franchise to people. It's easily one of my favorite new franchises. Like, your man Kojima is the real deal. And that's all I gotta say about that. But AMC, what have you been playing?
Oh, I've been playing. So I've been on this Switch too. So as I mentioned, got it that Sunday, set it up like a couple of days later once I started feeling better. And immediately it's just like, holy shit, like you feel the difference. One, you just see the difference when you look at it, like side by side. Like you see the old Switch and then you see this new one, and you're just like, one, how did I ever play on that screen? On the just like, 'cause it's just a lot smaller. Like they've managed to make the screen a lot bigger. The device itself just looks sleeker. But yeah, like I remember playing the Switch One. When I played it handheld, I literally played it handheld because I wanted to have the screen closer to me. Whereas now with the Switch Two, it's a little bit bigger. And so I've now actually been playing where it's actually like what is it? Where I put it on the stand, and then I got the controller separately, and I'm just playing it like it's like a little TV screen, and I play it on the Switch that way, and I've been really enjoying that. So the screen just upgrade, the size and just visual quality is already very noticeable in a way that just makes you want to engage more with it and not necessarily need the TV. I do the TV when like when Marissa and the kids are down and I got like time to play on the big screen, but I haven't had any issues playing on the smaller screen. Like just if I find some 20 minutes here or there, like while I'm working at home or some shit, like it's a perfect case scenario for that. And so immediately just loved all that. Loving the magnetic Joy-Cons. It just so on the previous Switch, what would happen is you would click them in, but then over time, like every now and then I'd be playing and like the Joy-Con, I could just feel it like about to come off of the handheld, like I guess device that you click them into. So you could, if you wanted to play off screen, you could click it into this handheld controller that you make with the two Joy-Cons. And with the clicking thing, I guess whatever they had that clicked it in, it wasn't the most sturdy thing if you like really started getting like rigorous with it or vigorous. And so this one with the magnetic, like that shit is firmly on, and you have to click like a certain thing for the magnetic strip to I guess like loosen. And so it's on there firmly, which is very noticeable. I'm assuming they said there's something in that technology that deals with the Joy-Con drift, and that's like what led to a lot of the Joy-Con drift with the previous controller. Who knows? I've been mainly playing on the Nintendo Pro Controller, the Switch, the original Pro Controller, which is absolutely awesome. I love that the accessories are all forwards compatible. Like I could even use the Switch One Joy-Cons for the Switch Two if I were to just use it for no reason. But
Damn.
mainly, I like having the Pro Controller because that Pro Controller was great. And also, I didn't want to immediately make another purchase right away with the accessories. So knowing that, like, oh, I don't have to buy another Pro Controller, and when I'm ready, I can get it and have the back pedals and all like that fun stuff. I think it's just like the only difference from what I read is The new Pro Controller has the back pedals, and it has the C button, which is the communication button if you're playing online, which I'm not going to use the Switch 2 for that as of right now. And so because of that, I'm not really worried about missing that C button. So yeah, I've been playing with the Pro Controller, loving that. Only game I've been playing on, I haven't even touched Mario Kart World yet. I've been playing Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Immediately got the Switch 2 upgrade. So the game is looking great. Didn't know what it looked like before, but visually looks awesome, runs very smoothly, and which is very important because the game is all about scale. What I'll say about Tears of the Kingdom is, first off, one of the greatest opening images, like re-entering the world situation. In Zelda, it's always like he wakes up from some shit and then it just comes out and it's like it's a new world. And so they do a really good job of explaining it. And in the opening, they explain the whole Sky Islands situation, like how it's a big upheaval and basically all these Sky Islands are created from it. And you wake up on one of them and you immediately you see a ledge. And it's like you take that, it's like, so you have that feeling one of like leaving the, let's say the vault, if you will, where you enter the world and like you're in this cave and you like see all this light, you're kind of blinded by it. And then you realize you're not on land, you're on a sky island. And your only option is to take that leap of faith off of the sky island. So immediately you jump off and you're just skydiving, which is dope. You have very little control. It's not a thing where like you're falling and you're like, I'm gonna just zoom to this by like contorting my body a certain way. It's like, nah, you're just falling and you can kind of aim yourself, but really what you're doing is you're just aiming for the biggest mass of water to fall onto. So you fall onto that, and then you have this whole tutorial island that you play on where you unlock all your major creation abilities, which is what really makes Zelda stand out, especially modern Zelda, is your ability to create. Breath of the Wild, there's a lot of physics with your abilities and how you're able to like manipulate objects with your ability, with your physics abilities, basically. Whereas in this one, you have the ability to not only pick up most things, but you can also fuse them together. And that's where the creation comes in, because you're now fusing like logs together or weapon. You're creating your weapons. Like you have a sword, you can attach like another blade onto it or a rock to make it like a big ass boulder thing for then excavating. Like you'll see like rocks where you can collect like say a diamond from it, but you need to break it down where it's like, well, if I have my sword and I fuse a boulder onto the sword, well, now I have a huge club that I can then break that rock up with and then get the minerals from it. And so that's like not just for combat, but it's what you need for like excavating. Then you also learn like, oh, if I find a sharp rock and I attach it to this like sword or this club, well, now I have an axe and now I can use that to chop down trees. And you then learn like you can make bundles of sticks, or you can just use that log of the tree that you cut down to infuse to another log, and next thing you know, you have a raft to attach to. And then as you're traveling through the world, you learn about this ancient civilization called the Zonai. Hoping I'm pronouncing that right, but the Zonai, and how they had like kind of like that lost city of Atlantis type of thing, where they had like all this future tech within their like prehistoric like civilization. And so there's all this tech like littered about the world after the upheaval. And then you realize like how you're able to then utilize the tech. Like you get like a fan. And so at first you get a boat and you build like you add a sail to it and use the current of the wind to sail that way. But then next thing you know, it's like, oh, I got a fan, so now I can create my own wind current. And so you're now attaching that to the boat. And
Damn.
it just things like that. Like as you're traveling the world, you find other things. Like there's a glider that you find and you can attach stuff onto that and you're making your own glider. I mentioned to you in a pre-show, there's like hot air balloons, and one of the Zonai tools you get is a fire, like it emits fire. And so you can not only attach that onto a weapon and make a fire weapon, fire
Oh,
breathing weapon, but then you
yeah.
can attach it onto a device, strike it, it starts shooting up the fire. Next thing you know, you're creating that hot air balloon. So there's
God
just,
damn.
yeah, so there's just different things to do. And it's like not only like is it an investigative open world game, but it's like having all these creative tools on it, it adds this whole other level of survivability on top of it that just this just makes modern Zelda just so like S tier compared to like pre like I would say other Zelda's great. I'm sure there's a lot of people who still probably hold like Majora's Mask and whatever like top tier. But yeah, this run of Zelda games, it's just on another level. Like it's When they first announced Tears of the Kingdom, there was a part of me that was like, oh, okay, more of Breath of the Wild. Interesting. But then once they added like the whole aspect of the Sky Islands and all these new abilities on top of it, and the whole thing with that is like there's this gloom that's created that's decaying the world. And so you see how when you're visiting all the places from Breath of the Wild, at once you touch down on land and you make it from the Sky Islands to the land, it's like all everything has changed because of the upheaval. And you see how it's one, like restructured some of the landscape, but two, on top of that, like how it's affected the different cities that you villages that you had visited in Breath of the Wild and how that's impacted things. And so not only in that, sorry, there's like all these scale, there's all this scale to the game. So you have the Sky Island, so that's like its own level of the map. You have the regular map, which is what you explored in Breath of the Wild, but then apparently because of the upheaval, all these chasms are created within the world underneath where the Sky Islands like used to be on the land, and you can go and explore that. It's all covered in gloom right now, so I can't explore, but they basically alluded to the fact that you'll be able to explore the chasms created by the upheaval, which means that you're going to be going into the earth, like below the earth, which is its own level of exploration. So there's a lot of scale and dimension to this game that just wasn't there in Breath of the Wild. So they've really added to this game in a way that I feel like has made it feel like a true sequel to the game, as opposed to like, that 1.5 distinction when people say like, it's new, but it's not really that new. Like I feel like this is a huge improvement on what was Breath of the Wild, and I can't wait. I have about 20 hours into it now, and I'm still like just getting a ton of new stuff and unlocking new stuff. So it's great, it's very rewarding, and I'm loving the puzzle solving when it comes to the shrines. Can't wait to get more Zelda in me. And yeah, I'll say Switch 2 is absolutely already hitting, and I haven't touched Mario
Yes.
Kart World or Donkey Kong Bonanza, so I am
Damn.
in absolute heaven. But A Dub, oh yeah.
Before we continue on, I was back when Tears of the Kingdom came out, somebody put out a YouTube video where they skydived from the Sky Island down to the lowest point of the game, and they were falling for well over 2 minutes.
Oh damn. So yeah, those chasms then must go deep then. Oh, I cannot wait.
Yeah, that video was awesome. I love that kind of stuff. Like, I love what you're talking about with the emergent gameplay coming from the creation tools. Like, I'll ask you the same question I asked you in the pre-show is like, are you already starting to have ideas of your super machine that you're gonna make that's like the AMC original that serves all you need?
Yeah, no, I'm already starting to get some ideas because I've gotten like wheels, I have the fire thing, and I have the fans. Like, there's a part of me is like, so I could create like a cart that goes forward. Like, I strike the wheels, that still gets it moving. Then I could set like a little flame breathing thing on the front, so that it's like a fire breathing like cart, so I can like attack. Like, I could use it for either for hunting or taking down enemies as I'm just riding across the landscape. Like, the big thing for me is figuring out how to direct it, because I understand the propulsion of the fan, but I don't think that's going to be enough to turn it in direction. So I'm going to need some type of like steering mechanism. But that's what I love about the game is there's still stuff that it hasn't uncovered for me. And then there's also the factor that like I might be able to create a tool that can help me steer the ship, and if you will. So yeah, it's out there and it's up there like with what they can do. And what I also added was that with I don't know if it's in the Switch 1 version, but Switch 2, they have the whole Nintendo app. And one of the things that they've created is an ability to import other people's creations. So there will be a point where I will be looking at other people's stuff and getting ideas there. But as of right now, I'm just trying to come up with my own ideas based on what they've taught me. And so yeah, it was great. Like one of the shrines, I'll say real quick, we have like 1 minute. One of the shrines, it was like there was this ball and I couldn't figure out, and it's like they gave me like a target and a ball, and I need to get the ball to it. And I'm like trying to just like pick it up and like throw it, and I'm like, I'm obviously not getting the velocity. Then I see this device and I'm able to like rotate it when I strike this other thing. And I was like, so if I attach like this pole onto it, here you go. And then I made a bat out of it. And then so
Damn.
I attach it to it, hit the mechanism, and then the device rotates. And next, and I see, I'm just whacking the ball, and eventually I get it to hit the target, and I solve the shrine. And it was just like, damn, like this is like where it's at, like where they're just teaching me like little details about like how the things can be manipulated to work in certain favors and to use physics as a way to then, I guess, control it. But yeah, that's all I got there. We're gonna head into break now, A-Dub, and we'll come back with our first topic of the week.
Topic of
Topic of
the
the
week.
week. All right, we are back. A-Dub, break us off with that first topic of the week.
Topic of the
Of the
week.
week.
AMC, I picked this one special for you.
Yes.
So here it goes. It's coming from Rebecca Valentine by way of IGN. It's a PSA to the gaming community. They want you to know that Octopath Traveler Zero on Nintendo Switch 2 is game key card only. So, AMC, now that you're in the wonderful world of the Switch 2, you are also privy to the wrinkles and the blemishes that might come with the process if you see them or view them in that way. So, question, how do you feel about the whole game key card thing? And also, as our resident expert of all things Octopath Traveler, how do you feel about Octopath Zero?
So I have not checked out Octopath Zero, but as far as the game key cards go, I haven't really noticed it. Like, if there is an issue, I'm not really sure what the issue is. I'm also not, I guess, sharing on multiple devices. Like, I have my old Switch, but my kids haven't really been using it. They've been playing Bluey, which is we had the physical copy of that game. So I haven't noticed, like, if for some reason they wanted to play one of the digital games on the old Switch, if it would be like a whole ordeal. But for me, as far as I know, it's like there's a game key card section. I go to it and it's no different than going into my PlayStation, was it games library? And it just shows all the games that I own. So I'm not really sure why it would be an issue if it's game key card only. Yeah,
Well, because some
it's
people want
like,
to have the entire game on their cartridge.
yeah, but doesn't that already happen with like games on PlayStation where you buy the disc and you realize like, oh, it's just a downloader, basically. Like
Yeah, people are
it's,
upset about that
yeah. So I don't
too.
really, I don't, I already get games digitally as it is, unless like it's gifted to me. So like Zelda was gifted to me, so I have that on a hard disk. But like I think it was Metroid Dread, I bought digitally because I didn't want to go out and buy the thing. So I kind of don't have an issue with the digital versus having a hard disk. Like I'm not worried about my games going away, because it feels like that's a lot of it is you're worried about your games going away, and so you want them on the disk. But on PlayStation, I'm already full on digital, so it's like if games get delisted from the PlayStation store and for some reason they were to be like, and you can't download it after the fact, I would be screwed. But I've already kind of given myself over to that space of just like, I may go by the whims of the digital gods, and that is how it will be. But also, I'm not really a go back and play old games necessarily type of person, so it's not really a concern of mine. Maybe other people, the games preservationists, they are concerned about that. But as far as I know, like, things have worked well. I've all my Switch 1 games, they just carried over to my Switch 2, and I can play them on there. So yeah, I don't really understand it. If anything, it seems like it's a good system in that you can give your games to other people. Like, I'm not sure on PlayStation, can you gift your digital game to somebody?
No, heavens no.
Yeah, and
You
so
have no
with the
rights.
yeah, and so with the with the game cards, they have a whole system where if you have your physical Switch and somebody else has their Switch, you could literally just connect to them and give them your game, and it's basically like handing your license off to somebody else. So it's in a way you still have ownership over the game in some form. So I get it, maybe it adds like some wrinkles, but it seems like you have more control in the fact that you can gift your games to other people, or like lend your digital game to somebody for, I think it's like a 2 week period or so. So
That's
there's
cool.
yeah, so it seems like it's a system that has the future of digital gaming in mind. So I don't have an issue with that. I do need to watch the direct on the Octopath Traveler Zero to find out what that's all about, because when I did hear that announced, I was like, oh, interesting. But do you have any more
On
details on that? But
Octopath Traveler, not specifically, it's just the PSA about the game key card. I just wanted to get your opinion
oh
on the whole
yeah.
situation.
Yeah, like I imagine there's people who have issues with it, but I don't really know what the system was before that you preferred before that. It just seems like if anything, they created structure for the digital system of how you can share your car share your games digitally. And people are just like, oh, now that you've added structure to this, I don't like this. But in the past, it's not like you could just give your games to other people. So if anything, they gave you the ability to share your games and give them to other people. So yeah, I don't really understand it. Like maybe if I tried to do something and I came up against like a brick wall with it, maybe I would then understand. But like it seems like to me they did a thing and people were like, you changed things up and I don't know how I feel about this. But very much is very much it feels almost like the Microsoft being like, hey, we have this whole digital system, and people are like, no, we like physical, we this is how we want to share our games, and you hand your game off to
We like
somebody.
used games.
Yeah, but then like what happened is like digital games became everybody's preferred style, and so it seems like everybody's buying their games digitally now, especially if you just look at the trends. So I don't know, it seems like it's complete people complaining about digital gaming, and yet their actions are showing that they're buying games digitally, so I don't really understand the whole criticism of it.
Nah.
Yeah.
Well, let's get to the next topic of the week. Top topic of
Topic
the
of the
week.
week. All right, we have some let's do it. Let's jump into this. We have some news from Sony, a little update on Marathon and
Oh.
the state of Bungie. So this coming by way of Video Games Chronicles. The article is titled Sony CFO says Marathon is expected to release before March and Bungie's independence is getting lighter, lighter, lighter. They're shortening that leash, a dub. So let's see.
Yeah, I bet.
In a Q&A session following the company's latest financial results, Sony's execs were asked about the current state of Marathon following the shooter's official delay and whether it was factored into Sony's forecast for the current fiscal year. The caller also asked for an update on the management of Bungie, as well as what Sony would do in the worst case scenario if Marathon was to be canceled outright. So the Sony CFO Lin Tao responded by saying Marathon is planned to release within the current fiscal year, which ends on March 31st, 2026. So this is from Lin verbatim. First, about Marathon, how we factored in it into the forecast, we expect to launch for that to launch within the fiscal year. But having said that, this is not a commitment. No official announcement has been given yet. So these are just expectations, A-Dub. With regards to Bungie, Tao reiterated Sony's decision to take more control over the studio's management, with the eventual aim being to completely integrate it into PlayStation Studios. So this coming straight from Tao. About the governance of Bungie, at the time of acquisition, we were offering a very independent environment. So that was one way of thinking. However, thereafter, we have gone through structural reform as we announced last year. So this independence is getting lighter. And Bungie is shifting into a role which is becoming more part of PlayStation Studios, and integration is proceeding. So, in the long term, if you can see, this is an ongoing process. The direction for Bungie is to become part of PlayStation Studios. And here's a final note. Marathon was originally planned to release in September on September 23rd, but Bungie announced in June that it would be officially delayed, claiming the game needed more time to refine and test it. So A-Dub, this is all speculation about when Marathon will come out, so I'm not going to ask you about that. But A-Dub, we know we often see criticism that, the publishers just got out of the way, the developers would be able to make great games. But in this case, we're seeing Sony saying we need to bring them into the fold because their independence is becoming a problem from our side. So, A-Dub, how do you feel about a publisher deciding to take more control over a developer, in this case being Bungie?
I mean, I feel like it's not so much deserved as it was earned, because just based on all the news and all the happenings with that company, where it's the developers that are trying to save the games and retain the audience, while the higher ups are the ones trying to strong arm, different things and, monetization and different kinds of decisions into the game that are pushing people away. So, and in this situation, it seems like the company leadership doesn't know what they're doing. So, of course, the company that's above them is gonna tighten things up. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some kind of ousting or something where it's just like, you guys gotta go. Because Sony, for everything that people are saying about them, as successful or not as their live service venture has been, the company still knows how to make games. The company still knows how to cultivate talent. The company still knows how to dominate in this space. So they gave Bungie plenty of room, and they used every square inch of it to continue to put themselves in a place where they need a stronger arm coming down, a stronger thumb on the scale. So yeah, I personally support it in this specific case because, there's still some good in Bungie. Like, there's still great talent, there's still great ideas, and just everything that they came in with is still solid stuff. Like, I still have flashbacks to my days playing Destiny 2 and just how buttery smooth those controls are, how just evocative and unique that art style was, and just how much fun I had with the game, especially in the almost rare times I could play with the AMC. I think maybe my brother was in. I don't know. I don't think we were really getting down back in those days. But I do remember playing online, and it was just a blast. Every time, I got out of it in the early days before they really started hammering out expansions and additional content. So I don't know what it has become, how much it's expanded and improved on the stuff that I personally enjoy. Like, I was really thrilled when they started throwing in more third person kind of stuff whenever you used your guardian moves and things like that. But I wish them the best. Sony, they gave them that long leash. We see where it's gone. So now let's see what happens when the big boys step back to the table and take what Bungie has to offer and shows them what to do with it.
Yeah, for me, I would say it's more of the criticism, live service development. I think this kind of is showcased here in that. So one thing I've heard echoed a lot recently, when a game fails, they're always like, well, they're trying to make these first person, these not first person, but these story driven single player developers make these live service games, and that's why they're failing. That's why they're failing. And you see, Bungie was brought in here for their expertise in live service games. And Sony is saying that expertise is not being showcased since we acquired you. And so, like, a part of me, what I've always want to say to people is, how about the fact that it's just hard to make a good game? And then it's even harder to make a good live service game. And this idea, I think it's like almost what I said to you earlier was like this idea. It's like it's always the publisher's fault. Like when a game does bad, it's always the publisher's fault. If you just got out of the way of the developers, they would just make a great game. You see, with EA, it's like we've had all these other studios try to make this game. We need Vince Zampella to save us for Battlefield. We have all these developers, and it's not like if we just got out of the way of the developers, they would just make a great game. You need great leadership. And it shows right here with Bungie. It's like they have all the developers and whatnot, but it's the leadership that is like you need the vision and you need the direction. And so I almost feel like there is a poo-pooing of management these days. Like, what is management good for? Just get out of the way of the creatives and it'll create good games. But it's like you need somebody with a vision and then somebody who will steer that vision. And that's why you consistently see great games from guys like Kojima, from, as I mentioned earlier, Vince and whatnot. It's because you need those people in place. And one of the things you hear about Bungie is, yeah, they might have the expertise, but something is going on with their leadership that they've just lost control of the game. And so I think there's it's almost like a downplaying of how easy it is to make a video game, where it is a tough thing, and having the right people in place really makes a huge difference. So you could have all the most creative lighting people and map designing people in there, but if you don't have somebody with a vision to steer them in the correct direction, then you get flop after flop. And so I think there's this idea of like, well, they've made great live service games, they could do it again. It's like, no, maybe sometimes it's they need better leadership. And so yeah, I totally agree with this idea of like bringing them in and possibly bringing in better leadership to steer them in the correct direction. But I also want to like heart like just once again just point out the fact that it is not easy to make a good game. One, it's not easy to make a good single player game, but even if you have the expertise of making live service games, it's still hard to make a good live service game. And so it's like I know people want to just say like, oh, it's just if the publishers got out of the way, but it sometimes it's the creative heads of the studios that are the problem, and the people who are managing it are the problem. But also it shows that they are dire, like a very capable leader is very much needed, because even if you don't have a good leader, the developers can't just make a great game. They need direction. Like there's all these cogs, but they all have to be on the same page. So no one person individually can just make a great game. And that's where leadership, I think, comes into play. And so the idea of just management is just there to kind of ruin the process is not at all the case. Like you need producers to keep people on track, because there's all these cogs in the system. And if you have, as we've seen with Bungie, you could have all these people doing their job right, and you have one creative guy who's working, who's not receiving the correct oversight, and they're just like, well, I can't come up with a great character design, so I'm gonna just look at what somebody else made and use that as my character design.
Jesus.
And so that's like, it just shows how there's, it's not just the leadership, it's oversight and then like proper management, which is like what leads to great games. And it's not just a bunch of individuals without publishers that make a great game. It's a unit, and you need a unit that can all work on the same path. And that is very important for making a great game. But
Hey, there's a reason that Randy Pitchford is still a Gearbox.
yep, Todd Howard, like yeah, all those dudes,
Yeah,
like
Kojima doesn't make games by itself, but
yeah.
nothing short of a masterpiece has ever happened under his watch.
Yeah, and to think that Kojima could just step away and his studio could just be like, we're all now Kojimas, like that is far from a reality. Like you would hope that they've gleaned some of his expertise, but there's a reason why he is Kojima, and they all work for Kojima. They might be the next Kojima within that group, but to think that they're all Kojimas, that's a reality that I think that's a leap, I would say, that people will sometimes believe about certain studios.
Hell
But
yeah.
that's all I got there. A dub. Do you have another topic, or do you want to take a quick break before we jump into the next one?
How much time do we have left?
We have like another, I did not set a timer, so let's just
Oh,
go.
it doesn't, you don't have it. Shit.
Yeah, I don't have that timer set up. Let's just take a quick break, and we'll come back with that next topic.
Of the week.
Topic of the week. All right, we are back. A dub. You want to hit us with that next topic of the week?
Topic of the week. Yes, this topic, it's a bunch of smaller topics that contribute to a larger topic. So I'll kind of just run through the headlines real quick, and you'll be able to put together the theme as we're going through this. First and foremost, we all know about what's going on with Turn 10, the studio being shut down, and Forza Motorsport, like basically being no more. Forza Horizon 5
Well, Turn
will be.
10, they were moved to a support studio, right? They weren't shut down.
That's right. Sorry about that
But yeah,
misinformation.
but basically, but support studio as opposed to fully developing a game.
Yeah, there's no more Forza Motorsport. Turn 10 support studio, they're going to be supporting Forza Horizon, that franchise, and that's where that's going. So another headline that hit over the past few days: Forza developer reassures fans that Motorsport Horizon 5 will continue to receive support after staff cuts. This is also coming around the same time as the following headline, where Xbox stops development on Contraband 4 years after initial E3 announcement. So Just to be clear here, this doesn't say they canceled the game. It just says they stopped production. The substance goes a bit like this, coming from Rebecca Valentine, IGN. Xbox has stopped development of Contraband to evaluate the project's future, with a Bloomberg report saying the game is canceled entirely. Yeah, but if they didn't say it's canceled, then I'm not going to jump out the window and say it's canceled either. Perhaps it can come back later. Let me see now. Avalanche had an official statement on their website where they say over the past several years, Avalanche Studios and Xbox Game Studios Publishing have collaborated on Contraband. Active development has now stopped while we evaluate the project's future. We're thankful for the excitement we've seen from the community since we announced, and we'll give an update on what's next as soon as we can. So it may not have been canceled, but it very well could be. It seems to be what's going on here. I hate to giggle, but I giggle to numb the pain because, this is, there was, they canceled something else. I'm just so hazy at this point. What was the other game that they can't, I think it was Everwild was canceled or something of that nature. Do you recall
We
that
know
episode?
Perfect Dark was
Perfect Dark, yeah. And people are warned. Oh, I think, no, I thought Everwild was too.
I don't the problem is I don't know, like, kind of Contraband. I don't know what Contraband was. Like, I know what Perfect Dark was because we actually saw the game, whereas I think Contraband we saw like one of those like title screens and
Yeah,
then like that
this
was
is like a teaser.
it. Yeah,
Yes.
but like,
So,
yeah, I don't remember what Everwild was either,
well, it
unfortunately.
was canceled. So that one, Perfect Dark, we're not getting any more Forza. And then this last headline is kind of the one that hits both of us a little close to home. IGN reporting, Becca Valentine, Rod Ferguson departs Blizzard and the Diablo franchise. He has a tweet where he says, the full thing here. After 5 years of driving the Diablo franchise forward with four big launches, it's time for me to step away from Blizzard, Microsoft, sword in hand, and see what's next. The teams are set up for success with an exciting slate of releases ahead. I'm incredibly proud of what we've built together and looking forward to what comes next for Diablo and for me. So Rod Ferguson, some of you may know him a bit better than we do, but he seems to have traced a path going as far back as the Gears of War franchise, where he stuck there until about Gears 5 and made his move to Diablo, working for Blizzard, and he's been there for a number of years. I think he managed to ship Diablo Immortal, Diablo 2 Remaster, Diablo 4, and Vessel of Hatred. Those are the only four recent releases I can think of where he was there. But yeah, man, I personally didn't have a problem with the guy. I've been poking around online, and some people have some interesting takes on how they feel about his departure from both Diablo and Blizzard. So, AMC, does this affect you in any way?
I mean, no, as I said, I don't really know what Contraband was. The thing with Rod Ferguson was when I read up on him, apparently he's left Microsoft three times already. So this is like his
Yeah,
so
because
it's like
he left with Gears, and then he went to Blizzard, then they got acquired by Microsoft. He left then, and he must have left one other time.
yeah, because he went to work at Epic also. And so, and I think I don't know if Epic worked on Gears or whatever, but yeah, he went to
I believe
Epic at one
so.
point. Yeah, and so he's left basically three times, and just still like had a working relationship with Microsoft throughout the years as he's like returned and worked on other games or whatever. But yeah, he's already kind of had like a come and go relationship when it came to Microsoft. So I feel like that kind of like almost shows like a like he has a history basically of jumping around, I would say, the industry. But the
I
recent
believe he
one,
has an interesting quote somebody noted, or maybe they're just trolling, where they said Rod Ferguson thinks it's healthy to change jobs every 5 years or so.
yeah, so I think there's like that's where I think some of the criticism comes with Rod Ferguson. And even like one of the quotes I saw like is like, I'm proud, like almost like at least the way the article is trying to spin it, he was like, He's leaving and he's proud of what he did, like in a way of like, I guess that there is criticism of Diablo 4, but he's still like holding on to like, I think I created good things while I was working on it. So, it's one of those things that when I did see the article, I always check the comments just to get an idea of where the trolling will be coming from. And a lot of it was like, I'm so like, I wish him the best. And I hope that he never comes back again or so that he stays far, far away from Diablo.
Yeah, I think I
So
saw
like it seems like
that
yeah, so
one.
it seems like there's a lot of Diablo fans that are kind of happy to see, like as I said, we're discussing Bungie and their leadership, maybe seeing some of the Diablo leadership get shaken up when it comes to like who's working on the game. And to almost feel like this is if you're looking at the criticism of Microsoft, I feel like this one actually isn't as bad if you're actually if you're one of the people that like didn't like the direction of how Blizzard was handling, the people was like, I don't like how Blizzard handles their games. Like I feel like those people are happy. I will say this though, when it comes to like Contraband though, obviously it's not great to hear a game being canceled. Like that's always the worst. I guess the reason where the whole is it canceled or is it not canceled thing comes in is because it's a so what we've seen is a lot of Microsoft pulling out their funding of third-party games. And so we saw this with Romero's game. I'm not sure which one that was. And people and that was initially was it Jason Schreier with the Wall Street Journal or fuck, oh Bloomberg. They initially had announced that that game was canceled. And then like a week later, Romero like clarified, he was like, no, Microsoft cut off our funding and right now we're looking for a new publisher. So they haven't they can't shut one, they can't shut down our studio because we're third party. And two, they technically I guess don't own the game. And so they can still like the pub like so that studio could still find just new funding for the game. And
Oh,
so it's a
that's
kind of a
dope.
weird thing.
So
Yes.
they get to carry on, maybe find a better relationship and make a better game as a
Yeah.
result.
Exactly. It's like that was kind of the thing with like Tango, or like the thing that we laughed at because there's like Tango technically shut down, but then they got picked up by your boys at
Like
Krafton.
crafting.
Yeah. And so it's like it's one of those things like where it's shut down is kind of a loose term for it's in limbo. Like some studios, like if it's a Microsoft first party studio and they shut them down, then they're shut down, they're done. But if it's a they have a working relationship with a third party studio and they cut out the funding, then that's more of a now that studio has to find the funding now for their game. And so it's a little bit of a different situation, but ultimately not great in that Microsoft had a vision and they're getting away from whatever that vision was with at least these games. And we know like a lot of it is stemming from Microsoft's, so this is Xbox now, Microsoft, the larger company, parent company, they have this shift towards AI and they really want to build out Copilot. And so, as I was discussing with you, like I kind of follow stocks, and one of the big things in stocks right now is there's an AI boom, and a lot of investors are pouring their money into companies that are investing in AI. And so, whether that's Nvidia with building the chips for AI, you see not digital, you see the what is it the so one of the companies like Digital Foundry, not Digital Foundry, Digital
Digital
Realty, I think
Foundry.
it's like Digital Realty Trust, and it's basically like companies that own server warehouses. Those are doing really well right now because they're basically they have the real estate that the companies need to run like their systems on. And then there's the individual companies like Microsoft and Apple's working on their thing, and then there's like other companies that are developing, like Meta. There's a big thing where Meta was poaching a bunch of OpenAI's like top developers for crazy amounts, like I think it's like $100 million salaries or something like
Jesus
that. Yeah,
Christ.
excuse me. And that's because they're just trying to get all the top talent in AI to come and work on Meta's AI project. And it's funny because like normal, like when the whole Meta thing, the metaverse was like a thing, people are actually investors are actually pulling money out to kind of like ding Meta for like focusing a lot of their resources on the metaverse. But with AI, it's not been proven. Oh, I think Gemini. So Alphabet, they have their Gemini product. But anyways, yeah, back to the AI thing. Investors are actually, as they're seeing these companies pour money into development of AI resources, investors are pouring more money into those companies, and Microsoft is seeing that, and so they're like, is it, I guess there's this thing of like whoever can be the first to get like the real AI thing out to the market in a consumer face forward approach, then they're gonna, if, in essence, they're gonna be the new Google search, because nobody's been able to duplicate Google search, and so now there's a race to be the new AI that's gonna replace Google search, because who's gonna need Google search when you can talk to a thing and it just gives you all the information? And so yeah, it's like it's because it's now shifted a lot of the focus of resources. And one of those ones, now back to gaming, is that Microsoft has basically said, we're not putting money into these other, I guess, projects that aren't surefire. And we're focusing now on the money makers. And so that's gonna unfortunately lead to a lot of
Damn.
consolidation. So it's
Wow.
yeah, and so it's unfortunate because yeah, we're seeing one, layoffs as a part of this, but also seeing games being, I guess, canceled or suspended, however the fuck you look at it. And yeah, it's not a great situation. It's unfortunate that this is the direction that Microsoft is heading in for when it comes to Xbox games, but they also apparently still have a ton of games in development. So we shall see if the game development comes to a screeching halt, or if like this is just one of those things where they were able to shed all this content because they also have all this other content on the way in the forms of, I guess, Fable and whatever. It's, I will say the bad part is at this point now, if Microsoft announces anything, it's now become that is vaporware until I see it with like see the game playable in some type of beta or out in the market. We can't believe that any game is at least safe from being canceled when it comes to Microsoft. So, and you don't want to have that consumer distrust in the publisher. So yeah, that's unfortunate. Do you have anything else, A-Dub?
Maybe after these messages from the local trolls, we got troll of the week,
Week,
troll of the
troll of the
week,
week,
troll of the
troll of the
week,
week,
troll of the
troll of the
week,
week,
troll of the
troll of the
week, week,
week, week, week,
week,
week,
week,
week.
week, 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 week. Today's trolls coming sideways, and Mr. Ferguson on his way out the door, just hitting him in the back with one more rotten tomato, just to let him know. It was real. First troll says, Rod Ice Bergerson, the master of leaving sinking ships. Next troll says, the Xbox effect at play once again. Now, you see, I picked this one because I have no idea what the Xbox effect is. Have you ever heard this term?
No, not at all.
So I guess we got some homework to do. Maybe somebody could write in
We know about the
controlissuespod@gmail.com.
Xbox tax, and now we're learning about the
The
Xbox
Xbox effect.
effect.
Next troll says, abandoning the sinking ship that is Xbox.
Yeah.
Next troll, he quotes Rob saying, driving the Diablo franchise forward. Thanks. I needed a good laugh to settle in after work. Next troll says, I would jump the Microsoft ship too. With that said, great job on Diablo 4. My buddies and I put 10 plus game days into that game and had a great time.
10+ years.
Damn. All right. Last troll says, used to be a fan of this guy in the early Gears of War days, but since Gears 5, everything he touches turns into a pile of crap. Damn.
Yeah.
So he was good, then he went bad. Now he can't do anything right.
Good girl gone
That's
bad.
crazy. Yeah, it's like the reason I linked the whole Rod Ferguson thing to the Xbox stuff is because his departure comes at a time when Xbox, Microsoft aren't doing particularly well, or they're doing great insofar as their market valuation. Like this time last year, I think Microsoft was down at like $300 a share. I checked after you told me about all the AI stuff, and they're up over 500. And I was like, "Holy shit! Should have got some of the $300 shares while I could have." But yeah, it's interesting timing. It's an interesting coincidence. But at the same token, like, is it not warranted in this kind of situation? Like, Microsoft consumes all these companies, and of course, you know, when things are consumed, you're not gonna absorb them 100%. You're gonna poop out some parts that are helping your body out. And I hate to equate the people and the creativity that's being shed from this mega corporation as equivalent to poop, because it's not. They're making great stuff, they're good talent. I would like to see a world where, or I would like to just see what happens if these people continue on in the industry, ship some products, and the revenge of success kind of thing,
Well, I mean,
because it's
Avalanche has a long history of making games, so I feel like they'll be fine.
Which Avalanche is this? Is this like Mad Max Just Cause Avalanche?
Yeah, that's what I had taken.
Okay. Yeah, if that's the case, like, why the fuck? Why haven't we gotten a new Just Cause? Or
Yeah.
they've been working on Contraband for the past 4 years, so there we go. But yeah, man, I'd like to see all this talent continue on. It's a sad state of affairs with what's going on over at Xbox, just because, these are real people. These are people's lives. This is talent. These are ideas and things that we're just not gonna see, not be able to experience. And it just sucks all around. Like, AMC, do you have anything to add here?
No, I mean, what I'm hoping is like what you're hoping with Microsoft is, I mean, it's a lot like Sony too. It's like you just want to see them get back on track, whether it's the live service initiative with Sony. Like, there's unfortunately, like right now, there's seemingly a lot of indecision within the industry, and that's leading to it's leading to a lot of like questioning of like the direction and things. And I feel like some of it is warranted, the questioning, I feel like, and then some of it is like you can't really control situations. So like one of the things is in the week that we missed, Nintendo announced, hey, we're raising the prices of the Switch One, and people
Yeah,
were like,
which
oh,
was
you're
crazy. I was gonna text you, but I was like,
yeah
nah, let me leave him alone.
yeah and that's like one of those things where it's like, well, like, and it's like it's looked at Nintendo, it's like, oh, like how can you do that? But it's like we have an administration that's like, hey, we're raising tariffs on all the people that make your stuff, so that's going to affect the cost of all your products. And the Switch One is still selling, so I imagine maybe there's still like some production going on there. And we saw with the initial announcement of the tariffs, Nintendo had announced the Switch Two, they had announced a price, and then literally the next day, Trump was like, tariffs going up on everybody, and Nintendo was
Jesus.
like, yeah, we're going to hold off on that price now. And then eventually they're just like, ah, you know what? It's going to be the same price, and we're going to raise the price of, like, I think they raised the price of the like some of the accessories, but they didn't raise the price of the console. And
Yeah.
so there is the one thing
They
I
raised
never
price
want
on all
you
of
yeah, so one of the things
this.
you never want to overlook, like, you know, we've heard this with like games and like characters being same-sex relationships and shit like that, where they're like, keep your politics out of my games and whatnot. And we're seeing with an administration that is kind of predicated on changing the narrative constantly, being like, you know what, tariffs, you see the stock market dive, and it's like, actually, we're open for business, so we're willing to negotiate the tariffs with everybody as we like announce deals. And so this level of uncertainty, it is absolutely affected by the politics of the situation. You're paying more for consoles because of the politics that are currently in place right now.
This is
And
crazy.
yeah, and so like you can complain about like, oh, like characters, the de-beautification of Aloy, or what is it, like
Why
Ellie
does
and her,
Tifa have a shirt on?
yeah, or Ellie and her same-sex relationships being front and center in The Last of Us. But like ultimately you're paying more for video games because of politics, and nobody's going to really discuss that, like, as keeping your politics out of my gaming. But really you're price line is being very much affected. So maybe you hated seeing same-sex relationships, but I know you hate more paying more for everything that you want to play. And we've seen that with Microsoft raising the price of their consoles, and now we're seeing with Nintendo raising the prices. And so I think this level of uncertainty is a lot predicated by the current environment of the world, where the like where people are making announcements and they have an idea of like, all right, this is what we're going to project. And then the landscape changes and they're like, actually, you know what? We're changing the situation. Yeah, like we saw it in the past with Sony. They're like, we believe in generations. And then the pandemic hits. They're not producing as many PS5s. And they're like, actually, you know what? These games, they work on the PS4 cross-gen, motherfuckers. And so, yeah, and that's the situation that it changed. The landscape changes, and thus the leadership has to change their decision making. And people see it as waffling, but the reality is you're adapting and you're adjusting to the times. And right now, they're adapting and adjusting to the times when it comes to tariffs and things like that. And so it's just creating a lot of uncertainty. And from the consumer standpoint, it's annoying, but you kind of have to like understand that they're making changes based on consumer habits and the ever-changing landscape of economics. So that's all I got there, A-Dub.
Remember the
Do you
good
have
old days when you could expect the world to remain largely the same for long periods of time?
Exactly.
Never know what tomorrow's gonna bring. This shit is crazy.
Like, keep your politics out of my games, A-Dub.
We troll of the week, troll of the
Troll of the
week,
week.
troll of the week, week,
I
week.
have enough time for one more quick hit, A-Dub. Do you have one, or you want me to just throw out my quick hit?
I would love you to throw your quick hit out. I mean, I have a couple quick ones, but they could be summed up in like two sentences.
Okay, here's mine. Battlefield EA announces biggest open beta ever. This is, I think it's by way of Eurogamer. I didn't write it down. But this is Battlefield's biggest open beta ever. EA announced on social media. Peak time is approaching and queues will be expected. We're working on entry times to the game and we appreciate your patience as we work out this situation. Oh, I just paraphrased that last part. And then Eurogamer said Battlefield 6 continues to attract record numbers of players over the weekend, clocking up to 521,079 concurrent players on Steam alone. That's more than multiplayer games like Helldivers 2, Elden Ring Nightreign, and Destiny 2, making Battlefield 6 Steam's 18th biggest game of concurrent player numbers ever. So, A-Dub, what do you think about the success of Battlefield 6?
I think it's great. We watched some clips of it in the pre-show. The it visually and as far as the motion of everything that's going on, especially with all that destructibility. Oh Lord. Like the action looks tense, frenetic, life or death. It looks awesome. Like if I was going to get into a military shooter of this kind, I think I would lean more towards Battlefield than the other alternatives because that looked like what I would want out of that kind of game. So the success seems like it's very well deserved, even to the point of the test being filled with cheaters as well. So already trying to refine their tools in preparation for the launch of this game. So it's very interesting, but I think this reflects very well on your man Vince. This reflects very well on the future of the Battlefield franchise, and I hope that the shooter bros get themselves another one that they can enjoy for the next few years.
Sir, all right. You want to throw out one of them quick hits or sum them up real
Yes.
quickly?
So yeah, sum them up again. Your man Hideo Kojima has confirmed that both Pheasant and OD are still in development and that they are still releasing. So everybody can relax and rest easy. Everything's gonna be fine.
We shall see. But I believe it with at least with Kojima, even if like. Assuming Microsoft doesn't own OD, your boy Kojima is going to find that funding if for some reason Microsoft were to cut him off of it. So I wouldn't be too worried as long as they don't own the rights to that game, that he would be able to find like another backer if for some reason Microsoft dropped the ball and decided to stop funding that project. But great to hear that. Great to know that
I'd
as
like to know if Kojima is one of, or if he is the most successful dude to leave a studio or leave a company, start his own studio, and make his own games. Because ever since he opened Kojima Productions, he has just been rolling them off of the assembly line, and they are great. So, hey.
Anything else before we get out of here?
Nah, that's about it for me.
Right, well, this is Control Issues. I am AAC.
And this is AJ. We are Control Issues. Thanks for playing.
all the shows!